This is Bullcast, an audio production of the Office of the Staffer's Advocate. Bullcast provides subject matter expert discussion and commentary on topics of interest to the Innovation Command.
Welcome, everyone, to Episode 3 of Bullcasts. This is Lieutenant Colonel Scott Felder, Chief of the Business Operations Law Division. Today, I'm joined by Captain Matt Neuringer of our Legal Command Task Force and our Deputy SJA, Lieutenant Colonel Jennifer Cave, to discuss the new CUI, Controlled Unclassified Information Non-Disclosure Agreement. As always, the views of our speakers are theirs alone and not the views of the Reserve Innovation Command, the Army, or the Department of Defense. Jennifer, Matt, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir. This is Captain Neuringer. So if you're not asleep already, I'm getting into it. So CUI, the genesis of this podcast actually came from a very practical implication and question that we got in the JAG office. So you'll see very quickly why our job is very boring in the JAG office, which came from one of our colleagues, which was, why am I being asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement about controlled unclassified information? Aren't I already required by law to comply with these requirements? And it was a good point for sure, but we had to look into it because it wasn't immediately apparent as to where the genesis of this NDA came from. And frankly, an NDA being signed in the Army, while you are an employee of a very large employer, and NDAs are not unusual in the employee-employer context, certainly is not something you come across every day in the Army. So to answer the question first, you know, we thought, well, you're in the Army, so just do what you're being told and sign it. But then when we looked into it, we realized that there's a whole series of reasons why this NDA came about. First is the Army G2 has a memo, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later, that was dated August 27, 2020. And we encourage all listening to this podcast to take a look at it, which requires all DOD and Army personnel in particular to take training. And that training is located on the CDSE website. And when you go through that training, which we've taken and I've taken now a couple of times, it was very fun the first time, and I figured we'd do it at least once or twice after that. And in it, you'll see very quickly that they note the NDA. And they say that all units are actually required to sign the NDA only if it is, in fact, required by your unit itself. And so in our case, the Army Futures Command has required the NDA. And as a result, all members of the Army Futures Command have signed the NDA. And so us in the 75th Innovation Command are therefore required to comply with the same requirements of the Futures of the AFC guidance. And so that's why we in the Futures Command and 75th IC are required to sign the NDA. Colonel Cape, do you have anything you want to add there?
Yeah, sure. Actually, really great. And that's a great foundation for it. And one of the things, you know, I try to remind folks is when you're signing an agreement, I mean, at its basic level, agreement is just telling you kind of like the left and right limits that you need to abide by and what's involved in this new CUI program. So if you have questions, it's also saying, you know, are your questions answered? They don't want you to be, you know, suddenly under this umbrella without any point of reference or training. So I think it's helpful in that, yeah, you're already by law required to comply with it, but what are you complying with? And I think the NDA does a good job of at least giving you a foundation to start from. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, legacy marking or like FOUO and things like that, we all just kind of knew them from seeing them. And obviously everybody had a heightened, you know, sensitivity towards classified marking. But unclassified FOU, you're like, okay, so it's for official use only. But yeah, what's that kind of mean? And I think the CUI NDA just does a better job of trying to tell you up front, like, listen, this is what we're getting at this time around with this type of marking and what you need to be aware of. So I applaud the Army for not playing hide the ball here. And I think it's a good document to help people understand what the new safeguarding and protections of unclassified information looks like.
And Matt, you actually raised a great point in there that our command's requirement to sign the NDA really flows from the support we provide the Futures Command. In other words, to ensure that we can continue to effectively support Futures Command, our leadership has decided that we should also operate under Futures Command's NDA.
The next question that we wanted to jump into here is, well, okay, we get the NDA, we understand why we need to sign it. So, but where did the CUI program come from? What's the history? And the answer is it has a long storied history in our American military culture. And this goes way back to the days of November 2010, where the president at that time issued Executive Order 13556, which again, people should get somewhat familiar with at a very high level. And the idea was that you had this disjointed, unconsolidated methodology for protecting information that wasn't classified information, but still required to be protected and or have special treatment as it pertains to being released to the public. And so the idea was, let's consolidate that all under one program so that when individuals within DoD, within the military, are interacting with this information, they know how to treat it irrespective of where they fit, as well as individuals who are outside consultants, outside contractors, know how the military and DoD as a whole will treat such information. And so the formal policy is that they want to establish an open and uniform program for managing unclassified information that requires safeguarding or dissemination controls due to and consistent with laws, regulations, and government-wide policy. So one can imagine when you're consolidating hundreds, if not thousands, of different confidentiality style protections and regulations and laws, that unless you have a photographic memory and the time on your hands to memorize all that, it would be quite difficult to figure out how to implement this program. So as a result, the idea was, let's implement this in a phased approach. First, there's a DODI 5248, which is the primary DoD level implementing guidance on CUI policy. And that's something that people actually should very much get familiar with, because that's what led to the memorandum, the Army implementing memorandum that I mentioned before, which is dated August 27, 2020. And obviously, August was not too long ago. And so all of this is still very new and still in its early gestation stages as to how it's being implemented. So when I mentioned the photographic memory, that leads to the NARA, National Archives and Records Administration, which is essentially serving as our photographic memory database for when CUI needs to be identified in documentation or communication. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later, about the archive that they have and their role in facilitating this program. So, Colonel Cave, anything else on this?
No, that was just brilliant. I know for me personally, I read through all that, and when I did the training, that was, you know, the same things that I got, and I just had to break it down Barney style for myself to understand, and just realize that it's overall for me to understand it and the history of it and why do we have it. Once I realized the problem it was trying to solve, which was basically every agency had their own language for how they controlled their unclassified information. So if they were going to mark it one way, another agency didn't understand that marking, so they didn't know if they could share it with each other. So they were basically all speaking their own language within their own agency. And if you look at CUI as maybe like the Rosetta Stone for it, it translates everybody or requires everyone to translate into one language that everyone understands. And that therefore each agency just sharing with each other, and that doesn't even get into the issue of sharing outside of DoD or government agencies. If each agency can just lawfully know what they can share with each other, that helped everybody just with information sharing. We all know that that was a big issue that came out of, you know, the time period after September 11th and just agencies talking to each other. And this really helped solve that problem. So while it may look like, you know, we're trying to learn a new language or a new way of doing things, just know that every agency is learning the same way of doing it, and it's meant to help you interact with these other agencies on a much more practical and efficient level. So that's all I'd throw in there. But really good summary. Thanks for that.
Hey, thanks, ma'am. So the next question that we get is, what is CUI? right? What is controlled unclassified information and what does it really mean? And the short answer is no one really knows immediately, right? No one knows, which is why you've got to look it up. And so I mentioned the CUI registry before. It's easily found at archives.gov/CUI/registry. And there, first of all, that particular link will provide you with a wealth of information on essentially everything and anything that your heart may desire as it pertains to CUI, whether it be the regs, implementing guidelines, and practical implications. And to me, the most useful part, though, is the registry. So the registry has two functions. One is that you can pull down a list of topics that the registry covers. They call them CUI categories. And these stretch from critical infrastructure. So if your person deals with emergency management or infrastructure, innovations around infrastructure, they've got a whole list of CUI categories there. And then you click through to each one of those categories and it tells you whether or not it's a basic or specified CUI category. And then it gives you the applicable link to the regulation that's relevant to that particular topic. In our case, as legal advisor to Talent Scout in the 75th IC, one of the practical implications that might be relevant for folks is in the patent context. So if you're on the CUI registry, you can go down and actually there's a category, a leading category for patent. And then there's subcategories for patent applications, inventions, and secrecy orders. And if you click through to invention, which in our context might be somewhat relevant, there's a citation there to 35 USC 205. There's a direct citation to how federal agencies should treat information that's disclosed to them that might be relevant to an invention. And it's quite helpful because what it says is that to the extent that you have information that either the government has originated or third parties have originated and it's been disclosed to you, that the governmental agency, the federal agency, does not have to make that information public. So long as the invention is something that the government either owns or may own a right, title, or interest in. So I think the may own language is actually really helpful in our context because it's likely that not everything that we're talking about is something that we own. But it is likely, or more likely, that it is something that we may own. And as a result, this application could be very useful for people's communications, so that if there's a question, if we give you this information pertaining to an invention that is not currently patented, is it going to be subject to federal freedom of information law and release vis-a-vis that methodology? So I think that's a really helpful practical implication and application for CUI in our context. But I don't know if there's anything else, Colonel Cave, you wanted to add on that.
I was just thinking through, and not having the patent experience that you do. I'm sure the Tech Scouts probably are right on board with what you're saying. But so, I mean, in the CUI context, so you would be offering that if it's something that is or isn't already patented, and it would be registered or marked under the registry because it's something that we have and we're looking at whether or not we can share it with another company. Or can you run me through that scenario again?
So this is totally in the context of withholding from disclosure to the public.
Okay. Any under a FOIA request, right? Or
exactly.
Okay, now I got it.
Yeah,
okay, great point. Yeah, I think that was an intriguing part about that. So looking at it through a FOIA request, how it would apply there. Great point. What do you want to tackle next?
So I think the next topic that is people might be on people's minds is who's responsible for identifying CUI, right? I think our interpretation of the guidance and the training is that really only you, the individual, can prevent the improper spread of CUI. Ultimately, it's up to you to identify it before it's been released. And I think the key here is that if there's ever a question, if you're going through this registry, for example, and you can't quite figure out whether or not it is something that should be marked and protected, then just reach out to the JAG office as a line of first defense. That's my initial thought on it.
Sure. And then, you know, also, I'm just going to reach out also to our security managers, our G2 folks, and see, kind of get their take on it. So I think the process of dealing with it's going to be a lot like our, you know, legacy FOUO and other ways that we did markings before. And there's also a lot of things that are akin to it, to way that you would protect, you know, personally identifiable information, PII.
Yeah, you guys have really highlighted something that is really one way in which we may experience a difference between old school FOUO and new style CUI. Things that used to be the province of the Intel community are really now going to be all of our responsibilities. And I think, Jennifer, you said it best. We really need to make sure that our folks keep in mind that none of us are an island. This is really going to be a team sport.
Do you think, or did you read anywhere in your research, you know, when this marketing, et cetera, you know, should be implemented every day? I mean, if I'm doing, you know, some sort of legal opinion, obviously that's protected under, you know, other protections. But if somebody's out working with if a tech scout's out working with a company today, should they be marking these items right now, do you think?
I think that they should be thinking about it for sure. The guidance and the regulations are currently effective. I think that really when they are having these interactions and exchanging written communication, it really should be looked at on a case-by-case basis to the extent that that information is received and then subsequently disseminated throughout the 75th IC. You know, if it's communication back and forth with a private party, for example, I think that is also going to be relevant for some of these protections that might apply in the registry. So I think in those, in both the context of internal communications and external communications, right now people should be thinking about it.
Probably it's also maybe for some comfort to everyone out there because it's so new. Don't feel like you have to look at it by yourself. You know, look at it, shoot it to our office, shoot it to the G2 and the security manager, you know, and we'll all help take a look at it. And then I think it's just going to be one of those things where the more you do it, the more you're going to notice and be able to see where a CUI stamp belongs and figure it out, you know, what's the best way forward with the information that you have. So definitely don't think like you have to tackle this and deal with it on your own for our tech scouts.
Agree. So as far as markings go, I guess the next question is, well, how do you mark? All the documents under this program will contain a uniform marking as opposed to the different types of markings that you may have seen across different agencies in the federal government. And that's going to be a CUI marking as described in DODI 5248. And so currently there is a discontinuance of all use of legacy or other marking, and those are no longer permitted or included in the CUI registry. So when you go to the CUI registry, it will show you the marking that you should have for the particular topic or category that you're covering. So for example, the invention one that we just talked about, category marking is the word invent. So it would be CUI invent. There's no way we could possibly cover off every one of those right now. So again, we're going to refer you to Appendix D of the DOD CUI marking guidance. And so that can all be found under DODI 5248. And then I think the last topic to try and cover, last couple topics, is safeguarding and transmission. And then ultimately, you know, how does it affect our industry partners? We did talk about this a little bit already. First is during working hours, all DA personnel have to be careful not to expose CUI to any unauthorized users, others who do not have lawful governmental purpose. For example, cover sheets can be placed on top of documents to seal the contents. Personnel also should keep CUI under control at all times. Right now, where many people are working from home, it might not necessarily be as applicable, but in the office context, you know, at least a physical barrier, some type of physical obstruction between the actual CUI itself and others who don't have an entitlement to see that information should be considered. Generally speaking, shouldn't be printing it out and storing it in a personal residence or hotel rooms, etc. Generally speaking, if you're out in the public, it's fine to have this information so long as it still is on you, as long as it still meets those types of visual barriers that we just talked about.
Yeah, I think that was very helpful in understanding kind of, you know, what I should be doing with this, because I know just from my day-to-day work, I'm just going to have a lot of information that meets the definition of CUI on my computer. And with teleworking, I've got my computer at home. I know a lot of our tech scouts, they VPN in, or they may not have access to a government computer, and they're going to be, you know, coming at it from a lot of unofficial computers, resources, and things like that. And I think here for, you know, most folks, and tell me if I'm wrong, Matt, it's kind of the same common sense safeguards that you would have under the legacy program of FOUO and how we deal with PII. I don't know if anybody's recalls recently where PII was just safeguarding, was just a huge push in the Army, and we had problems with, you know, in rec-